The Quiet Season by Josephine Wainwright. Narrator, Josephine Wainwright. Prologue, August 31st, 2024, Downeaster number 683, approaching Portland. I'm writing this on the train, because if I don't put it down, I will stand up and pull the emergency cord and walk back through three cars in two states to where I started, and I cannot start again. I have started too many times. The seat across from me is empty. The man who was there, young, with a wedding ring he kept turning like a volume knob, got off at Exeter. I watched him check his phone on the platform. He did not look back. This is the kind of detail I notice now that I have nothing else to do but notice things. I am coming home not because I deserve it, but because the quiet in my chest got too loud to bear alone. That is the truest sentence I have written in 8 years, and I will never show it to anyone. Ella will meet me at the station. She doesn't know that yet. She thinks I am sending a letter, the way I have sent letters every third month for the past 4 years. Then envelopes with return addresses in Arizona. Then New Mexico. Then Colorado. Each one a little more faded than the last. I told her I was writing a memoir. I told her I needed space. I told her so many things that were shaped like truth but were really just the negative space around the lie. The truth is simpler and uglier. I left because I couldn't watch her build a life without me in it, and now I cannot watch anything else. The coffee is terrible. Paper cup terrible, burnt and watery, the kind of coffee you drink because drinking it gives your hands something to do. I have wrapped both palms around the cup and the heat is the only thing that feels real. Outside, the landscape has gone from scrubby inland trees to the first salt marshes, channels of dark water cutting through reeds. Maine doesn't ease you into it. 1 minute, you're in New Hampshire. The next, you're in a place that smells like low tide and decisions you can't take back. I used to love that about this coast. The way it refused to apologize for being harsh. I bought a scarf in the Portland Station gift shop before I boarded. Bright orange silk, with a pattern of goldfish swimming through kelp. It cost $42, which is absurd, but I needed something to cover the scar on my throat. The scar is old and white, and people always ask about it in that careful voice they use for things they don't actually want to know. Car accident, I tell him. Windshield. The lie is smooth as river stone. I have told it so many times I almost believe it myself. The scar is not from a car accident, but I am not ready to write about that yet. Maybe I am not ready to write about any of it. Maybe that's why I'm here instead of sending another thin envelope. The train slows. We are passing the old mill buildings, brick and boarded, and then the first houses of Port Harbor appear. White clapboard, blue shutters, a porch swing that someone painted the color of dried blood. I remember that swing. I remember pushing Ella on it when she was small enough to fit in the crook of my arm. She wore a yellow sundress with strawberries on it, and she laughed the way children laugh before they learn that adults can break. I taught her that lesson myself, not on purpose. Not the way you mean when you say you taught someone something, but I taught it to her all the same. The conductor's voice comes over the speaker, tinny and broken, announcing our arrival in 5 minutes. 5 minutes. I have 5 minutes to decide if I am brave enough to get off this train. I am not brave. I have never been brave. I am good at looking like I am. The silk scarf, the deliberate calm, the slow movements that suggest a woman who has made peace with her life. But bravery is something you practice, and I stopped practicing years ago. I stopped practicing everything except the shape of my absence. Ella will be at the bakery. It's 6 in the morning. She opens at 7, and she will be there by 5. Rolling dough and preheating ovens and pretending that she doesn't notice the empty chair at her counter. The one I used to sit in with a cup of tea and a book I wasn't reading. She has probably given that chair to someone else by now. She has probably given everything of mine away. I would. If I were her, I would have burned it all. The train slows further, brakes grinding, and I see the station. A small brick building with a sign that says, "Welcome to Port Harbor." In letters that have faded to the color of old bone, there are people on the platform. A woman with a dog. A man in a yellow vest. A teenager with earbuds the size of her fist. No Ella. Of course not. She doesn't know. I should have called. I should have sent a telegram, a smoke signal, a carrier pigeon. Anything but this. Showing up like a bad penny, like a ghost at a funeral. But I didn't call, because if I had called, she would have told me not to come. And I would have listened. And then I would have stayed in Colorado until the quiet in my chest got so loud I couldn't hear anything else. The train stops. The door opens. The air rushes in, salt and diesel and something green, and I stand up because sitting down is no longer an option. My bag is small. One suitcase, one tote. I travel light because I practice leaving. I know exactly